WCHD 3 Detroit, KMPS HD 3 Seattle, WBMX HD 3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage? Virtual. Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good and fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com, and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. This is Fired Up with CJ. You can find CJ on fireitupwithcj.com. Be sure to go there and check her out. She has a lot of great information on her website. We're in June, everyone. We're halfway through. This month is all about exploring what it will take to live in a balance and harmony with the planet and the life around us. Hi, CJ.
Hey. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fire It Up with CJ show. Oh, Cassandra, I was having so much fun preparing for this show. Actually, I don't know if I would call it fun, but I was doing a lot of reading and preparing. Folks probably don't know this, but to prepare for this show, I usually read, watch movies, do whatever the guest is trying to get the word out on. And I was reading a lot of the stuff on our current guest, Professor John Grimm, and his Forum on Religion and Ecology. And I had a transcendent moment. I was reading, and I was trying to digest this information, and it felt like almost like I was pounding more and more information into my head. And I got to a passage that Thomas Berry had written. And I actually, tears were forming in my eyes. And I thought, oh, my God, what is happening to me? Where you're reading something that seems, you know, like you're kind of pursuing something in an academic way, and something, you hit something that registers as a truth and beautiful, and it was so poignant. So today we have John Grimm, who is also a student of Thomas Berry, and one of the things that he wrote, Thomas Berry wrote, he says, we find ourselves ethically destitute just when, for the first time, we face with ultimacy the irreversible closing down of Earth's functioning in its major life systems. Our ethical traditions know how to deal with suicide, homicide, and even genocide. But these traditions collapse entirely when confronted with biocide, the extinction of vulnerable life systems on Earth, and geocide, the devastation of Earth itself. So the human is at a cultural impasse, and radical new forms are needed. And John Grimm is developing one of these, who's a professor at Yale, is developing one of these radical new forms. And one is through his work on the form of religion and ecology, which you're going to talk about today. So welcome, John.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
So let me ask you, what was your aha? I mean, I had my kind of transcendent moment when all the things kind of clicked together, and I had kind of a major aha and kind of a sense of truth. What was yours when you were studying this material?
It's lovely to go back and imagine myself into those aha moments. And you mentioned Thomas Berry, and certainly my meeting with him in the late 1960s was such an aha moment. But it's also the long passage of time with him, namely the discussions, and then with my co-director of the Forum on Religion and Ecology and my wife, Mary Evelyn Tucker. There are certainly aha moments when you find someone to partner with for a life. Mm-hmm. But to go to that type of aha moment, an experiential moment that you're suggesting, there's certainly the times when I was studying shamanism, healing practices among Native peoples, and beginning to realize, especially with Crow people in Montana, who call themselves Apsaloke, and that sense of healing with the earth. Mm-hmm. And in the 1980s and 90s, and those traveling to Crow country since then, those are my aha moments.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular, what was the healing that, was it a witness of the healing that was done with the earth, or what did
the
you see?
The sense of community, the many healings that took place, so not one specifically, but many indeed, and the sense of a community reaching back into its own story, as Thomas Berry would speak of the new story, and a dream of the earth, that people who realize that they live within the living earth around them.
Hmm. And I've never seen a healing practice. I mean, what did you take us back to that, you know, an example of one and how that gave you a stronger sense of community?
Yes, one would be very intimate and close in a sweat lodge where saplings are bent over and tied together in a special way and covered often with skins and now with blankets and cloth, and stones are heated outside and brought in and then water poured over them. And many people know the sweat lodge, but healers among Native communities have often worked with these moments and with these presences in the stones and in those spiritual presences that they are able to evoke in their rituals to come and bring individuals into a transformed experience in their lives.
So it was the community that you were referring to, when you said that, I was imagining communing with the earth, because, you know, you have the heat of the fire, and you have all the elements that are in play, that fire and the water. Was it communing with the earth, or was it communing with each other as you were joining on your spiritual path, or both?
Yes, I think you're actually touching on something that's very important. Among indigenous communities, widely experienced, the communing with one another is in that context of the earth. And I think that's very difficult for us who don't come from Native communities to appreciate that. I'm thinking back at a Sundance that I attended many years ago now, where over the mountains came a fierce storm. And as the storm came to this Sundance ground, it split, and it went in the two side directions. And so I commented to an elder, "You must have chosen this place very significantly because it has a meteorological effect." And he says, "What do you mean?" I said, "The storm has been split." And he said, "Oh, no, storms come here when the sun dances near. But when the dance is here, this is more powerful than the storm." So that sense of a community that responds to the earth around it.
Oh, my gosh. I got just chills just thinking about that. When he said that, were you like, what?
I was perplexed, but that's one of those aha moments that doesn't reveal, except one can get caught in one's own romance of Native peoples. But more importantly, over these long conversations, you begin to realize that there's a mindfulness and an awareness that the earth is that which we come from, and that we are the dream coming out of this earth. And it's that kind of relatedness that begins to orient a person and to really ground a person.
Mm-hmm. And so what's happened to our poor society? How did we get so lost from these beautiful indigenous cultures where there's so many beautiful rituals that are in harmony with the earth, and that recognition with the changes of the seasons and, you know, the controlling, you know, the cognizance of the wind? What happened to us? What do you think is the root cause? I've read a lot of stuff, and it says, you know, the God created this earth in the sense of God right now is that, you know, there are a lot of religious. What's your sense? How would you do the summary of what happened?
I appreciate that you put it in the context of what happened to us, because what I hear underneath your question is, or the statement underneath it, is that we are all indigenous. Mm-hmm. All humans, past and to be, are on this earth. This is our home. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to try and look for that one moment, just to say, use the word aha again, and say, well, perhaps agriculture, when we started farming practices, we detached. Or maybe when science emerged, we can say that. Or philosophically, we can point towards René Descartes and say that when Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am," and he pulls human subjectivity out of the extended matter of the world. Each of these is a kind of an aha moment, but I think that it's a very It's a very difficult question. Perhaps it's in our evolutionary history to transcend who we are, to draw out of. And in that sense, we've drawn out of matter in the natural world, and our own technologies have become a kind of substitute for the intimacy we've had with the natural world. And now we finger our digital technology as if it were something intimate and loving to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's almost this fascination with technology, and it's almost like staring ourselves in the window, you know, because we're kind of like, how many hits did I get? How many people did, like, you know, it's like this narcissistic view.
Yes, and yes, this is where we are, and
yeah.
So we will have to go through this in order to come to a sense of Earth community or a sense of who we are on this planet and how to be responsible and mindful of fostering and flourishing life on this planet. We will need to go through this technology, and we will need it in order to undertake the actions ahead of us.
Yeah. And so I wanted to ask you, you said that you recently just did a screening of your new movie, Journey of the Universe, in which you got incredible kind of conversations going. Tell me a little bit about what you intended out of that movie and kind of the kind of conversations that ensued.
Yes, The Journey of the Universe is a trilogy. It's a book from Yale University Press and a film, Journey of the Universe, and then a set of conversations also carrying the title Journey of the Universe with 10 scientists and then with 10 environmental activists, so that this effort is to bring together a vision of ourselves as coming out of the Journey of the Universe with actions that bring us more intimately and more closely into an understanding of what that journey means.
Mm.
Perhaps Thomas Berry's use of the word new story is helpful here. I'm a cultural historian myself, a historian of religions, and I study with Native peoples to try and understand differences in cultures and ways in which people place themselves in responsibility to their region and their life. And so that sense of participation in the story has impressed itself upon me. And when I entered with Mary Evelyn Tucker and Brian Swim into the Journey of the Universe project, I began to make my own connections between the stories that people have had of themselves. And I asked with Thomas Berry, what is our story? And that scientific story of our emergence out of the beginnings of this universe locates us, it grounds us in that singular moment from which the universe flared forth. And when we locate ourselves in that journey of the universe, suddenly it's as if we participate in something which is larger than ourselves and ongoing, but also something which is very immediate. It places us in a position where matter around us matters.
So it's if we actually take the scientific story that you talk about, I just have seen the first version of the Journey of the Universe and the creation of the universe, and we can say, aha, I am made out of stardust. I am part of the story. I'm not just this a part of the earth that's control. I'm not this human that's controlling everything. In fact, I'm part of the story. Is that what you meant when you said, yeah? Okay.
Yes, I find that our science colleagues who, of course, teaching at Yale Forestry and Environmental Studies, we're in conversation with scientists every day. And oftentimes our science colleagues are very taken with the language of random and purposeless and meaningless. And we tease them saying, that's not exactly the language we need. No. We need more hopeful language. And we need to find the ground that we share in common, namely wonder. And that's a crucial part of Journey of the Universe, to be mindful of the universe in all of its wonder. Because scientists themselves went into their careers drawn by something that engaged them. And so also those in the humanities and social sciences and entrepreneurial activity and all of these things that allure us as human beings. It's this deep wonder that we need to explore again, and not simply raise into some religious or spiritual level, but rather wonder as an opening into that which transforms us. So Journey of the Universe is an effort to turn our attention to ongoing transformation in our universe.
Okay, we have John Grimm from Yale University, who is one of the executive producers, along with his wife, of the newly released Journey of the Universe, and he's also the coordinator of the Forum of Religion and Ecology. And so next we are going to take a scholarly look at some of the major religions and what it says about developing an Earth consciousness. We'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on fireitupwithcj.com and call CJ now.
248-545-7685. Leave.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. This is Fire It Up with CJ. Our guest today is John Grimm, the executive producer of the new released movie, Journey of the Universe, and a coordinator for the Forum of Religion and Ecology. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio, and we're going to go right back to CJ and John.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So today I was walking doing my nature walk and ran into a friend who is creating a charter for compassion. And then he's like, what are you working on? And I said, oh, I'm preparing for this interview. And he said, the one thing that I recognize is that if I look across all the major religions, the one thing that they share is compassion. But what they haven't figured out is exactly a way to talk about that compassion when it comes to the natural world.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so today our guest on John Grimm has done that in his Forum of Religion and Ecology. There's several sections in there that talk about Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, all the major religions, and what do those religions say in their sacred texts about the connection between humans and the natural world. So we're going to explore a little bit of that in the segment. So welcome back, John.
Yes, it's good to be with you.
So tell me, when you look at it, so that was my friend's take, compassion. That's one thing that you see across all, that's the one unifying theme. What did you see when you looked at all these world religions? What's the unifying theme?
I am actually, as a student of religion, I'm moved much more by difference among the religions than unifying themes. Mm. I think it is possible to talk about shared perspectives and crossing boundaries, so I don't want to make a sharp separation, but distinction and difference mark reality for me, in that sense, religion.
Mm. Okay, what were the differences? Like, when you look at what are the major differences that, or what are the differences, and how do each of the religions have, what is the relationship to the environment around them?
To take, say, Christianity and Buddhism, I think it's in some traditions, say in the Abrahamic traditions, we are very given in Judaism and Christianity and Islam to make exclusive claims. And the simple point I'm trying to make is that if you say you're a Jew, then you're not a Christian. You can't be a Muslim. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the other Asian communities and in the indigenous world, it's a much more inclusive view. In that sense, there are many sacred paths, and they may not be for everyone, but those that speak to a person are valid, are considered valid. So in the Chinese world, for example, a Confucian may very well be a Taoist also. And in fact, they may practice Buddhism. So you find among indigenous communities also where a person can be Christian and still undertake traditional life. So it's a very interesting question in the religious traditions. And when we bring this to environmental issues, then the questions become very focused.
Mm. Okay, so how do you see there's the inclusive and exclusive. How does that relate to, or does it relate to at all, their relationship to ecology?
In, say, the Christian tradition, if I were to try to bring a Christian into a more ecological understanding, I would ask them to reflect upon God's creation. And from the evangelical through the Protestant traditions, the Catholic tradition, the Orthodox Christian tradition, that sense of God having created reality is consistent through all of them. So that's a basic point. And then the person of Jesus, upon whom those traditions are focused, became incarnate in the flesh. Mm-hmm. So the sense of matter, mattering, is inherent in Christianity. And then finally, if you think of a sacramental tradition, namely, in these traditions, they often have rituals in which a material substance, like bread or in the Eucharist or communion or water in baptism, these material things become sacred. And so in Christianity, there is a very natural disposition to an understanding of wonder and sacredness in reality.
Mm-hmm. But then also, you know, when I hear of the story of creation, and maybe this is my own limited understanding of it because I'm not a Christian, but I look at it and I hear it and I think, okay, some white guy with a beard and robes created earth,
yeah.
And now, you know, God created earth, and he created woman and the likeness of a blah, 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 you know, the whole story. I think, wow. I guess that just means God will take care of everything. I don't have to take care of the planet.
I think
planet.
You have a point. There's a kind of a paternalism and a transcendence that becomes very dangerous. But how about if we consider it this way, CJ? What if we think that this creation that we're in, that there was an understanding in scriptures that was passed down, and we could say this for any tradition, so let's not get so obsessed with, say, the Abraham or with Christianity, but within the traditions, as we think of them, the divine creative dimension within the cosmos rather than without. So rather than a creative act from without, how about the creative act within? And the sense of the divine, then, is an ongoing genesis or a cosmogenesis within creation itself. And then we come actually very close to East Asian traditions like Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism, where the organic world is constantly involved in creating itself.
Okay, so what you're saying, instead of the whole idea of God created this and let's just have God, you know, continue because we don't want to deal with it versus the idea of, no, we're actually playing and now we're co-creating with the universe.
Yeah.
And so we're communing and communicating together with the earth.
Yeah.
And, and hey, by the way, the earth isn't so happy. Did you notice? It's talking to us. So we're communing.
Isn't it? Not so happy and yet exuberant. We're having a beautiful sunny day here in Connecticut, so it's exuberant.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not, you know, and there's storms, you know, that you're having a sunny day here right now in New Haven, and it could actually be hit with snow tomorrow. I mean, that's what you're talking about.
Very seriously, we need to be mindful today.
Yeah, we're not listening. Okay, so how about boots? So you're saying with the Eastern religions, do you feel like the whole idea of ecology and in those inclusive religions, do you think that they include ecology as part of their...
Consider this, CJ, that in Buddhism, one of the most compassionate acts that was transformed into a ritual in Buddhism was a compassion for animals and the release of animals.
Mm-hmm.
But I know of instances where the irony of this ritual has led to the capture of animals so that they can be released during the ritual. So obviously the whole spirit of that compassionate act has been lost.
Yeah.
What we need to do is recover the wisdom of Buddhism in that tradition, of course, that extends compassion. Brian Swim uses the term comprehensive compassion. And what he means by that is, of course, a very challenging idea embedded in this whole film and the project of Journey of the Universe to extend human mindfulness into the Earth community, and where our compassion is not simply for the flourishing of the human, but for the flourishing of life insofar as we understand and relate to it.
I mean, here's how I see it. I think you could say, yes, it's compassion for all, but that, and a pure scientific or realistic perspective, if we don't give compassion and love and take care of those things, there's a reciprocal relationship. I mean, we our whole livelihood depends on air, fresh and clean air, water. And so, I mean, whether you look at it from a religious perspective or just purely practical and said, you know, if you don't have compassion with these, just have compassion for yourself, because soon we will not have, soon our children and we will not have fresh air, water.
Exactly. Food. Exactly. Even there are now ecological economists and policymakers like Gus Beth who are working on new economic alliances to begin to talk about a new economics of deep time, where we begin to understand the material reality that we're molding and changing in our industrial processes, and beginning to realize, where does that come from? What are we doing to ourselves when we're making it? And isn't it possible to make things such as cell phones in ways that we can recover the material that they're made from? We have these capacities, but we are not implementing them.
This is going to seem tangential, but it is related. I was doing a meditation yesterday, and I was contemplating this interview, and the image that came up was Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And people make fun of Michael Jackson because he's taken this technology of face surgery, and he's operated on himself that we can't even figure out what he looks like anymore. And people kind of mock and make fun of, like, oh, look at Michael Jackson. But the reality is we're doing that to ourselves. Right, we're using technology to continue to make ourselves more beautiful, better, smarter, skinnier. And to what ends? The end is that we are no longer part of nature. I mean, you look at Michael Jackson at the end, you're like, what is that?
Yes, it's
for a person doing
example, but I very much agree, and you're very good to bring compassion to Michael Jackson, and yet as a mirror to ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we are Michael Jackson. How's that for a close?
Yeah. Good.
All right, thank you so much. We have John Grimm from Yale University. Make sure to check out his movie, Journey of the Universe. And it's out right now. Are all of the three series out right now?
Yes, they are all available from Amazon. And my final comment, CJ, is remember, we're not a collection of objects, as Thomas Berry would say. We're a communion of subjects.
I love that. Thank you so much for being here. Blessings to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye. So next we have Tim Hawk, author of 50 Rules for Sons. And folks, make sure to go to www.firedupwithcj.com to get a schedule of upcoming shows. We'll be right back.